at 7.
I'm Phoebe Fox. As part of the BBC Shakespeare Festival, I play Lady Anne in The Hollow Crown, The Wars of the Roses. Actors dream of doing Shakespeare with a cast like this. It looks like I got lucky. But where I feel really fortunate is being part of Shakespeare's greatest plays. Desperation, the intrigue, and for me, my character's agony in making a choice that is no choice at all. If someone says they don't like Shakespeare's plays, I tell them they just haven't found their play yet. Find your Shakespeare as you like it.
The Hollow Crown, The Wars of the Roses starts with Henry VI Part 1 on Saturday night at 9 on BBC 2.
Well, now on Radio 4, as part of the BBC Shakespeare Festival, Tim Pigott-Smith and Robert Glenister star in the first part of Shakespeare's great political drama, Julius Caesar. Today, Cassius attempts to persuade Brutus that Caesar's ambition is a threat to the Republic. Julius Caesar by William Shakespeare.
Let's home, you idle creatures! Get you home! This is a holiday! What, know you not being mechanical, you ought not walk upon a labouring day without the sign of your profession? Speak, what trade art thou?
Why, sir, a carpenter.
Where is thy leather apron and thy rule? What dost thou with thy best apparel on? You, sir, what trade are you?
Truly, sir, in respect of a fine workman, I am but, as you would say, a cobbler.
But what trade art thou? Answer me directly.
A trade, sir, that I hope I may use with a safe conscience, which is indeed, sir, a mender of bad souls.
What trade, thou knave, thou naughty knave, what trade?
Nay, I beseech you, sir, be not out with me. Yet, if you be out, sir, I can mend you.
What means thou by that? Mend me, thou saucy fellow.
Why, sir, cobble you.
Thou art a cobbler, art thou?
Truly, sir, all that I live by is with the awl. I meddle with no tradesman matters, no women's matters, but with awl. I am indeed, sir, a surgeon to old shoes. When they are in great danger, I recover them. As proper men as ever trod upon neat's leather have got upon my handiwork.
But wherefore art not in thy shop today? Why dost thou leave these men about the streets?
Truly, sir, to wear out their shoes, to get myself into more work. But indeed, sir, we make holiday to see Caesar and to rejoice in his triumph.
Wherefore rejoice? What conquest brings he home? What tributaries follow him to Rome to grace in captive bonds his chariot wheels? You blocks, you stones, you worse than senseless things. Oh, you hard hearts, you cruel men of Rome. Knew you not Pompey? Many a time and oft have you climbed up to walls and battlements, to towers and windows, yea, to chimney tops, your infants in your arms, and there have sat the livelong day with patient expectation to see great Pompey pass the streets of Rome. And when you saw his chariot but appear, have you not made an universal shout? The Tiber trembled underneath her banks to hear the replication of your sounds made in her concave shores. And do you now put on your best attire? And do you now cull out a holiday?
Go, go, good countrymen! For this fault, assemble all the poor men of your sort. Draw them to Tiber banks and weep your tears into the channel, to the lowest stream to kiss the most exalted shores of all.
See whether their basest metal be not moved. They vanish tongue-tied in their guiltiness. Go you down that way towards the capital, this way will I. Disrobe the images if you do find them decked with ceremonies.
May we do so, Flavius? You know it is the feast of Lupercal.
Tis no matter, Marius. Let no images be hung with Caesar's trophies. I'll about and drive away the vulgar from the street. So do you too, where you perceive them thick. These growing feathers plucked from Caesar's wing will make him fly an ordinary pitch, who else would soar above the view of men and keep us all in servile fearfulness.
Calpurnia!
Haste! Ho! Caesar speaks!
Calpurnia?
Yeah, my lord.
Stand you directly in Antonius' way when he doth run his course. Antonius,
Caesar, my lord.
Forget not in your speed, Antonius, to touch Calpurnia, for our elders say, the baron, touch it in this holy chase. Shake off their sterile curse.
I shall remember. When Caesar says do this, it is performed.
Set on, and leave no ceremony out.
Caesar!
Ah! Who calls?
Let every noise be still. Peace yet again.
Who is it in the press that calls on me? I hear a tongue, shriller than all the music, cry Caesar. Speak. Caesar is turned to hear.
Beware the Ides of March!
What man is that?
A soothsayer bids you beware the Ides of March.
Set him before me. Let me see his face.
Fellow, come from the throng. Look upon Caesar.
What sayest thou to me now? Speak once again.
Beware the Ides of March.
He is a dreamer. Let us leave him. Pass!
Well, Brutus, will you go see the order of the court?
Not I.
I pray you do.
I am not gamesome. I do lack some part of that quick spirit that is in Antony. Let me not hinder Cassius your desires. I'll leave you.
Oh, Brutus, I do observe you now of late. I have not from your eyes that gentleness and show of love as I was wont to have. You bear too stubborn and too strange a hand over your friend that loves you.
Cassius, be not deceived. If I have veiled my look, I turn the trouble of my countenance merely upon myself. Vexed I am of late with passions of some difference, conceptions only proper to myself, which give some soil perhaps to my behaviors. But let not therefore my good friends be grieved, among which number, Cassius, you be one. Nor construe any further my neglect than that poor Brutus, with himself at war, forgets the shows of love to other men.
Oh, then, Brutus, I have much mistook your passion, by means whereof this breast of mine hath buried thoughts of great value, worthy cogitations. Tell me, good Brutus, can you see your face?
No, Cassius. The eye sees not itself, but by reflection by some other things.
But 'tis just. And it is very much lamented, Brutus, that you have no such mirrors as will turn your hidden worthiness into your eye, that you might see your shadow. I have heard where many of the best respect in Rome, except immortal Caesar, speaking of Brutus and groaning underneath this age's yoke, have wished that noble Brutus had his eyes.
Into what dangers would you lead me, Cassius, that you would have me seek into myself for that which is not in me?
But therefore, good Brutus, be prepared to hear, and since you know you cannot see yourself so well as by reflection, I, your glass, will modestly discover to yourself that of yourself which you yet know not of. And be not jealous on me, gentle Brutus. Were I a common laugher, or did use to stale with ordinary oaths my love to every new protester, if you know that I do fawn on men and hug them hard and after scandal them, or if you know that I profess myself in banqueting to all the rout, then hold me dangerous.
What means this shouting? I do fear the people choose Caesar for their king.
Aye, do you fear it? Then must I think you would not have it so?
I would not, Cassius, yet I love him well. But wherefore do you hold me here so long? What is it that you would impart to me? If it be aught toward the general good, set honor in one eye and death in the other, and I will look on both indifferently. For let the gods so speed me as I love the name of honor more than I fear death.
I know that virtue to be in you, Brutus, as well as I do know your outward favor. Well, honor is the subject of my story. I cannot tell what you and other men think of this life, but for my single self I had as lief not be as live to be in awe of such a thing as I myself. I was born free as Caesar. So were you. We both have fed as well, and we can both endure the winter's cold as well as he. For once, upon a raw and gusty day, the troubled Tiber chafing with her shores, Caesar said to me, "Darest thou, Cassius, now, leap in with me into this angry flood, and swim to yonder point?" Upon the word, accoutred as I was, I plunged in and bade him follow, so indeed he did. The torrent roared, and we did buffet it with lusty sinews, throwing it aside and stemming it with hearts of controversy. But ere we could arrive, the point proposed, Caesar cried, "Help me, Cassius, or I sink." I, as Aeneas, our great ancestor, did from the flames of Troy upon his shoulder the old Anchises bear. So from the waves of Tiber did I, the tired Caesar. And this man is now become a god. And Cassius is a wretched creature that must bend his body if Caesar carelessly, but not on him.
Cassius,
he had a fever when he was in Spain. And when the fit was on him, I did mark how he did shake. 'Tis true, this god did shake. His coward lips did from their colour fly, and that selfsame eye whose bend doth all the world did lose his lustre. I did hear him groan. Aye, and that tongue of his that bade the Romans mark him and write his speeches in their books, alas, it cried, "Give me some drink, Titinius," as a sick girl. Ye gods, it doth amaze me. A man of such a feeble temper should so get the start of the majestic world and bear the palm alone.
Another general shout. I do believe that these applauses are for some new honours that are heaped on Caesar.
Why, man, he doth bestride the narrow world like a colossus, and we petty men walk under his huge legs and peep about to find ourselves dishonourable graves. Men, at some time, are masters of their fates. The fault, dear Brutus, is not in our stars, but in ourselves, that we are underlings. Brutus and Caesar. What should be in that Caesar? Why should that name be sounded more than yours? Write them together, yours is as fair a name. Sound them, it doth become the mouth as well. Weigh them, it is as heavy. Conjure with them, Brutus, will start a spirit as soon as Caesar. Now in the names of all the gods at once, upon what meat doth this our Caesar feed that he is grown so great? Age, thou art shamed. Rome, thou hast lost the breed of noble bloods. When went there by an age since the great flood, but it was famed with more than with one man? When could they say till now that talked of Rome, that her wide walls encompassed but one man? Now is it Rome indeed, and room enough when there is in it but one only man? How you and I have heard our fathers say there was a Brutus once that would have brooked the eternal devil to keep his state in Rome as easily as a king.
That you do love me, I am nothing jealous. What you would work me to, I have some aim. How I have thought of this and of these times, I shall recount hereafter. For this present I would not, so with love I might entreat you, be any further moved. What you have said I will consider. What you have to say I will with patience hear, and find a time both meet to hear and answer such high things. Till then, my noble friend, chew upon this. Brutus had rather be a villager than to repute himself a son of Rome under these hard conditions as this time is like to lay upon us.
I am glad that my weak words have struck but thus much show of fire from Brutus.
The games are done and Caesar is returning.
As they pass by, pluck Casca by the sleeve and he will, after his sour fashion, tell you what hath proceeded, worthy note, today.
I will do so. But look you, Cassius, the angry spot doth glow on Caesar's brow, and all the rest look like a chidden train. Calpurnia's cheek is pale, and Cicero looks with such ferret and such fiery eyes as we have seen him in the Capitol, being crossed in conference by some senators.
Casca will tell us what the matter is.
Antonius!
Caesar!
Let me have men about me that are fat, sleek-headed men, and such a sleeper night. Young Cassius has a lean and hungry look. He thinks too much. Such men are dangerous.
Fear him not, Caesar. He's not dangerous. He is a noble Roman and well given.
Would he were fatter. But I fear him not. Yet if my name were liable to fear,
I do not know the man I should avoid so soon as that spare Cassius. He reads much. He is a great observer, and he looks quite through the deeds of men. He loves no plays, as thou dost, Antony. He hears no music. Seldom he smiles, and smiles in such a sort as if he mocked himself and scorned his spirit that could be moved to smile at anything. Such men as he be never at heart's ease, whilst they behold a greater than themselves, and therefore are they very dangerous. I rather tell thee what is to be feared than what I fear, for always I am Caesar. Come on my right hand, for this ear is deaf, and tell me truly what thou thinkst of him.
You pulled me by the cloak. Would you speak with me?
Aye, Casca. Tell us what has chanced today that Caesar looks so sad.
Why, you were with him, were you not?
I should not then ask Casca what had chanced.
Why, there was a crown offered him, and being offered him, he put it by with the back of his hand. Thus. And then the people fell a-shouting.
What was the second noise for?
Why, for that too.
They shouted thrice. What was the last cry for?
Why, for that too.
Was the crown offered him thrice?
Aye, man, it was. And he put it by thrice, every time gentler than other. And at every putting by, mine honest neighbours shouted.
Who offered him the crown?
Why, Antony.
Tell us the manner of it, gentle Casca.
I can as well be hanged as tell the manner of it. It was mere foolery. I did not mark it. I saw Mark Antony offer him a crown. Yet, it was not a crown, neither. It was one of these coronets. And as I told you, he put it by once. But for all that, to my thinking, he would fain have had it. Then he offered it to him again. Then he put it by again. But to my thinking, he was very loath to lay his fingers off it. And then he offered it the third time. He put it the third time by, and still, as he refused it, the rabblement hooted and clapped their chapped hands and threw up their sweaty nightcaps and uttered such a deal of stinking breath because Caesar refused the crown that it had almost choked Caesar, for he swooned and fell down at it. And for mine own part, I durst not laugh for fear of opening my lips and receiving the bad air.
But soft, I pray you, what did Caesar swoon?
He fell down in the marketplace and foamed at mouth and was speechless.
Tis very like he hath the falling sickness.
Oh, no, Caesar hath it not, but you and I and honest Casca, we have the falling sickness.
I know not what you mean by that, but I am sure Caesar fell down. If the tag-rag people did not clap him and hiss him according as he pleased and displeased them, as they used to do the players in the theatre, I am no true man.
And after that he came thus sad away.
Aye.
Did Cicero say anything?
Aye. He spoke Greek.
To what effect?
Nay, and I tell you that, I'll ne'er look in a face again. But those that understood him smiled at one another and shook their heads, but for mine own part it was Greek to me. I could tell you more news, too. Marullus and Flavius, for pulling scarfs off Caesar's images, are put to silence.
Even so.
Fare you well. There was more foolery yet, if I could remember it.
Will you sup with me tonight, Casca?
No, I'm promised for.
Will you dine with me tomorrow?
Aye, if I be alive, and your mind hold, and your dinner worth the eating.
Oh, good. I will expect you.
Do so. Farewell, both.
What a blunt fellow is this grown to be. He was quick metal when he went to school.
So is he now in execution of any bold or noble enterprise, however he puts on this tardy form. This rudeness is a sauce to his good wit, which gives men's stomach to digest his words with better appetite.
And so it is. For this time, I will leave you. Tomorrow, if you please to speak with me, I will come home to you, or if you will, come home to me, and I will wait for you.
I will do so. Till then, think of the world. Well, Brutus, thou art noble, yet I see thy honorable mettle may be wrought from that it is disposed. Therefore it is meet that noble minds keep ever with their likes. For who so firm that cannot be seduced? Caesar doth bear me hard, but he loves Brutus. If I were Brutus now and he were Cassius, he should not humor me. I will this night, in several hands, in at his windows, throw, as if they came from several citizens, writings all tending to the great opinion that Rome holds of his name, wherein obscurely Caesar's ambition shall be glanced at. And after this, let Caesar seat him sure, for we will shake him, or worse days endure.
Good evening, Asgard. Brought you Caesar home? Why are you so breathless? Why stare you so?
I thought you moved, when all the sway of earth shakes like a thing unfirm. Oh, Cicero, I have seen tempests when the scolding winds have rived the knotty oaks, and I have seen the ambitious ocean swell and rage and foam to be exalted with the threatening clouds, but never till tonight. Never till now did I go through a tempest-dropping fire. Oh. Either there is civil strife in heaven, or else the world, too saucy with the gods, incenses them to send destruction. Common slave. You know him well by sight. Held up his left hand, which did flame and burn like 20 torches joined, and yet his hand, not sensible of fire, remained unscorched. Besides, I had not since put up my sword against the Capitol, and met a lion who glared upon me and went surly by without annoying me. And there were drawn upon a heap 100 ghastly women, transformed with their fear, who swore they saw men all in fire walk up and down the streets. And yesterday, the bird of night did sit even at noonday upon the marketplace, hooting and shrieking. When these prodigies do so conjointly meet, let not men say, these are their reasons, they are natural. For I believe they are portentous things unto the climates that they point upon.
Indeed, it is a strange disposed time. But men may construe things after their fashion, clean from the purpose of the things themselves. Comes Caesar to the Capitol tomorrow?
He doth. For he did bid Antonius send word to you he would be there tomorrow.
Good night, then, Casca. This disturbed sky is not to walk in.
Farewell, Cicero. A Roman?
Casca, by your voice.
Your ear is good. Cassius. What night is this?
A very pleasing night to honest men.
Whoever knew the heavens men are so?
Those that have known the earth so full of faults. For my part, I have walked about the streets, submitting me unto this perilous night, and thus, unbraced, Casca, as you see, have bared my bosom to the thunderstone. And when the cross blue lightning seemed to open the breast of heaven, I did present myself, even in the aim and very flash of it.
But wherefore did you so much tempt the heavens? It is the part of men to fear and tremble when the most mighty gods by token send such dreadful heralds to astonish us.
You are dull, Casca, and those sparks of life that should be in a Roman you do want, or else you use not. You look pale and gaze and put on fear and cast yourself in wonder to see the strange impatience of the heavens. But if you would consider the true cause, why all these fires, why all these gliding ghosts, why birds and beasts from quality and kind, why old men, fools, and children calculate, why all these things change from their ordinance, their natures, and preformed faculties to monstrous quality? Why, you shall find that heaven hath infused them with these spirits to make them instruments of fear and warning unto some monstrous state. Now could I, Casca, name to thee a man most like this dreadful night, that thunders, lightens, opens graves, and roars as doth the lion in the Capitol. A man no mightier than thyself or me in personal action, yet prodigious grown and fearful as these strange eruptions are.
'Tis Caesar that you mean, is it not, Cassius?
Let it be who it is. For Romans now have thews and limbs like to their ancestors, but woe the while our fathers' minds are dead, and we are governed with our mothers' spirits. Our yoke and sufferance shows us womanish.
Indeed. They say the senators tomorrow mean to establish Caesar as a king. And he shall wear his crown by sea and land in every place save here in Italy.
And why should Caesar be a tyrant then? Poor man, I know he would not be a wolf, but that he sees the Romans are but sheep. He were no lion, were not Romans hinds. Those that with haste will make a mighty fire begin it with weak straws. What trash is Rome? What rubbish and what offal when it serves for the base matter to illuminate so vile a thing as Caesar. But, oh grief, where hast thou led me? I perhaps speak this before a willing bondman. Then I know my answer must be made. But I am armed, and dangers are to me indifferent.
You speak to Casca? And to such a man that is no fleering telltale. Hold my hand. Be factious for redress of all these griefs, and I will set this foot of mine as far as who goes farthest.
There's a bargain made. Now, know you, Casca, I have moved already some certain of the noblest-minded Romans to undergo with me an enterprise of honorable, dangerous consequence. And I do know by this they stay for me in Pompey's porch. For now, this fearful night, there is no stir or walking in the streets, and the complexion of the element in favors like the work we have in hand, most bloody, fiery, and most terrible.
Stand closer, Wyfer. Here comes one in haste.
It is Cinna. I know him by his gait. He is a friend. Cinna! Where haste you so?
To find out you. Who's that? Metellus Simba?
No, it is Casca, one incorporate to our attempts. Am I not stayed for, Cinna?
I am glad, aunt. What a fearful night is this. This two or three of us have seen strange sights.
Am I not stayed for? Tell me.
Yes, you are. Oh, Cassius, if you could but win the noble Brutus to our party.
Be you content. Good Cinna, take this paper, and look you lay it in the praetor's chair where Brutus may but find it, and throw this in at his window. Set this up with wax upon old Brutus' statue. All this done, repair to Pompey's porch, where you shall find us. Is Decius Brutus and Trebonius there?
All but Metellus Simba, and he's gone to seek you at your house. Well, I will hie and so bestow these papers as you bade me.
That done, repair to Pompey's theatre.
Farewell.
Come, Casca. You and I will yet ere day see Brutus at his house. Three parts of him is ours already, and the man entire upon the next encounter yields him ours.
Oh, he sits high in all the people's hearts. And that which would appear offense in us, his countenance, like richest alchemy, will change to virtue and to worthiness.
Him and his worth and our great need of him you have right well conceited. Let us go, for it is after midnight, and ere day we will awake him and be sure of him.
What, Lucius Ho?
I cannot, by the progress of the stars, give guess how near today.
Lucius, I say, I would it were my fault to sleep so soundly. When, Lucius, when, awake, I say. What, Lucius?
Called you, my lord?
Get me a taper in my study, Lucius. When it is lighted, come and call me here.
I will, my lord.
It must be by his death. And for my part, I know no personal cause to spurn at him but for the general. He would be crowned. How that might change his nature, there's the question. It is the bright day that brings forth the adder, and that craves wary walking. Crown him that, and then I grant we put a sting in him, that at his will he may do danger with. The abuse of greatness is when it disjoins remorse from power. And, to speak truth of Caesar, I have not known when his affection swayed more than his reason. But 'tis a common proof that lowliness is young ambition's ladder, whereto the climber upward turns his face. But when he once attains the utmost round, he then unto the ladder turns his back, looks in the clouds, scorning the base degrees by which he did ascend. So Caesar may. Then lest he may prevent, And since the quarrel will bear no colour for the thing he is, fashion it thus. That what he is, augmented, would run to these and these extremities, and therefore think him as a serpent's egg, which, hatched, would, as his kind, grow mischievous, and kill him in the shell.
The taper burneth in your closet, sir. Searching the window for a flint, I found this paper, thus sealed up, and I am sure it did not lie there when I went to bed.
Get you to bed again. It is not day. Is not tomorrow, boy, the Ides of March?
I know not, sir.
Look in the calendar and bring me word.
I will, sir.
The exhalations whizzing in the air give so much light that I may read by them. Brutus, thou sleepst. Awake and see thyself. Shall Rome, etc. Speak, strike, redress. Brutus, thou sleepst. Awake. Such instigations have been often dropped where I have took them up. Shall Rome, etc. Thus must I piece it out. Shall Rome stand under one man's awe? What, Rome? My ancestors did from the streets of Rome the Tarquin drive when he was called a king. Speak, strike, redress. Am I entreated to speak and strike? O Rome, I make thee promise. If the redress will follow, thou receivest thy full petition at the hand of Brutus.
Sir, March has wasted 14 days.
'Tis good. Go to the gate. Somebody knocks. Oh, since Cassius first did wet me against Caesar, I have not slept. Between the acting of a dreadful thing and the first motion, all the interim is like a phantasma or a hideous dream. The genius and the mortal instruments are then in council, and the state of man, like to a little kingdom, suffers then the nature of an insurrection.
Sir, 'tis your brother Cassius at the door, who doth desire to see you.
Is he alone?
No, sir. There are more with him.
Do you know them?
No, sir. Their hats are plucked about their ears, and half their faces buried in their cloaks, that by no means I may discover them by any mark of favour.
Let them enter. They are the faction. O conspiracy, shamest thou to show thy dangerous brow by night when evils are most free? O then by day, where wilt thou find a cavern dark enough to mask thy monstrous visage? Seek none, conspiracy. Hide it in smiles and affability. For if thou path thy native semblance on, not Erebus itself would dim enough to hide thee from prevention.
I think we are too bold upon your rest. Good morrow, Brutus. Do we trouble you?
I have been up this hour, awake all night. Know I these men that come along with you?
Yes, every man of them, and no man here but honours you, and every one doth wish you had but that opinion of yourself which every noble Roman bears of you. This is Trebonius.
He is welcome hither.
This Decius Brutus.
He is welcome too.
This Casca, this Cinna, and this Metellus Cimber.
They are all welcome. What watchful cares do interpose themselves betwixt your eyes and mine?
Shall I entreat a word? Here lies the east. Doth not the day break here?
No.
Oh, pardon, sir. It doth. And yon grey lines that fret the clouds are messengers of day.
You shall confess that you're both deceived. Here, as I point my sword, the sun arises, which is a great way growing on the south, weighing the youthful season of the year. Some 2 months hence, up higher, toward the north, he first presents his fire. And the high east stands as the capital. Directly here.
Give me your hands all over, one by one.
Let us swear our resolution.
No, not an oath. If not the face of men, the sufferance of our souls, the time's abuse, if these be motives, we could break off betimes, and every man hence to his idle bed. So let high-sighted tyranny range on till each man drop by lottery. But if these, as I am sure they do, bear fire enough to kindle cowards and to steal with valour the melting spirits of women, then
countrymen, what need we any spur but our own cause to prick us to redress? What other bond than secret Romans that have spoke the word and will not palter? And what other oath than honesty to honesty engaged, that this shall be, or we will fall for it?
But what of Cicero? Shall we sound him? I think he will stand very strong with us.
Let us not leave him out.
No, by no means.
Oh, let us have him. For silver hairs will purchase us a good opinion, and buy men's voices to commend our deeds. It shall be said his judgment ruled our hands. Our youths and wildness shall no whit appear, but all be buried in his gravity. Oh, name him not. Let us not break with him. For he will never follow anything that other men begin.
Then leave him out.
Indeed, he is not fit.
Shall no man else be touched, but only Caesar?
Decius, well urged. I think it is not meet Mark Antony, so well beloved of Caesar, should outlive Caesar. We shall find of him a shrewd contriver. And you know his means, if he improve them, may well stretch so far as to annoy us all. Which to prevent, let Antony and Caesar fall together.
Our course will seem too bloody, Caius Cassius, to cut the head off and then hack the limbs, like wrath in death and envy afterwards. For Antony is but a limb of Caesar. Let us be sacrificers, but not butchers, Caius. We all stand up against the spirit of Caesar, and in the spirit of men there is no blood. Oh, that we then could come by Caesar's spirit and not dismember Caesar. But alas, Caesar must bleed for it. And, gentle friends, let's kill him boldly, but not wrathfully. Let's carve him as a dish fit for the gods, not hew him as a carcass fit for hounds. Mm. And let our hearts, as subtle masters do, stir up their servants to an act of rage and after seem to chide them. This shall make our purpose necessary and not envious. Which, so appearing to the common eyes, we shall be called perjurers, not murderers. And for Mark Antony, think not of him. For he can do no more than Caesar's arm when Caesar's head is off.
Yet I fear him for the engrafted love he bears to Caesar.
Alas, good Cassius, do not think of him. If he loves Caesar, all that he can do is to himself take thought and die for Caesar. And that were much he should, for he is given to sports, to wildness, and much company.
There is no fear in him. Let him not die, for he will live and laugh at this hereafter.
Peace. Count the clock.
The clock hath stricken three.
It is time to part.
But it is doubtful yet whether Caesar will come forth today or no. For he is superstitious, grown of late, quite from the main opinion he held once of fantasy, of dreams and ceremonies. It may be these apparent prodigies, the unaccustomed terror of this night, and the persuasion of his auguries may hold him from the capital today.
Never fear that. If he be so resolved, I can o'ersway him, for he loves to hear that unicorns may be betrayed with trees, and bears with glasses, elephants with holes, lions with toils, and men with flatterers. But when I tell him he hates flatterers, he says he does, being then most flattered. Let me work, for I can give his humour the true bent, and I will bring him to the capital.
Nay. We will all of us be there to fetch him.
By the eighth hour, is that the uttermost?
Be that the uttermost, and fail not then.
Caius Ligarius doth bear Caesar hard, who rated him for speaking well of Pompey. I wonder none of you thought of him.
Now, good Metellus, go along by him. He loves me well, and I have given him reasons. Send him but hither, and I'll fashion him.
The morning comes upon us. We'll leave you, Brutus. And friends, disperse yourselves, but all remember what you have said and show yourselves true Romans.
Good gentlemen, look fresh and merrily. Let not our looks put on our purposes, but bear it as our Roman actors do, with untired spirits and formal constancy. And so good morrow to you, everyone.
Boy.
Lucius. Fast asleep. It is no matter. Enjoy the honey-heavy dew of slumber. Thou hast no figures nor no fantasies, which busy care draws in the brains of men. Therefore thou sleepst so sound.
Brutus, my lord?
Portia, what mean you? Wherefore rise you now? It is not for your health thus to commit your weak condition to the raw, cold morning.
Not for yours neither. You've ungently, Brutus, stole from my bed.
And yesternight, at supper, you suddenly arose and walked about, musing and sighing, with your arms across. And when I asked you what the matter was, you stared upon me with ungentle looks. I urged you further, then you scratched your head and too impatiently stamped with your foot. Yet I insisted, yet you answered not, but with an angry wafter of your hand gave sign for me to leave you, so I did, fearing to strengthen that impatience which seemed too much enkindled, and withal hoping it was but an effect of humour, which sometimes hath his hour with every man. It will not let you eat, nor talk, nor sleep. And could it work so much upon your shape as it hath much prevailed on your condition, I should not know you, Brutus. Dear my lord, make me acquainted with your cause of grief.
I am not well in health, that is all.
Brutus is wise, and were he not in health, he would embrace the means to come by it.
Why, so I do. Good Portia, go to bed.
Is Brutus sick? And is it physical to walk unbraced and suck up the humours of the dank morning? What, is Brutus sick? And will he steal out of his wholesome bed to dare the vile contagion of the night and tempt the roomy and unpurged air to add unto his sickness? No, my Brutus. You have some sick offence within your mind, which, by the right and virtue of my place, I ought to know of. And upon my knees, I charm you, by my once commended beauty, by all your vows of love, and that great vow which did incorporate and make us one, that you unfold to me yourself, your half, why you are heavy, and what men tonight have had resort to you. For here have been some six or seven who did hide their faces even from darkness.
Kneel not, gentle Portia.
I should not need if you were gentle, Brutus. Within the bond of marriage, tell me, Brutus, is it accepted I should know no secrets that appertain to you? Am I yourself but, as it were, in sort or limitation to keep with you at meals, comfort your bed, and talk to you sometimes? Dwell I but in the suburbs of your good pleasure? If it be no more, Portia is Brutus's harlot, not his wife.
You are my true and honourable wife, as dear to me as are the ruddy drops that visit my sad heart.
If this were true, then should I know this secret? I grant I am a woman, but withal a woman that Lord Brutus took to wife. I grant I am a woman, but withal a woman well reputed, Cato's daughter. Think you I am no stronger than my sex, being so fathered and so husbanded? Tell me your counsels. I will not disclose them. I've made strong proof of my constancy, giving myself a voluntary wound here in the thigh. Can I bear that with patience, and not my husband's secrets?
Oh, ye gods, render me worthy of this noble wife. Hark, hark, one knocks. Portia, go in a while, and by thy bosom shall partake the secrets of my heart. All my engagements I will construe to thee, all the charactery of my sad brows. Leave me with haste.
Lucius, who's that knocks?
Here is a sick man that would speak with you.
Caius Ligarius that Metellus spake of. Boy, stand aside.
Caius Ligarius, how? Thou safe good morrow from a feeble tongue.
Oh, what a time have you chose our brave Caius to wear a kerchief. Would you were not sick.
I am not sick, if Brutus have in hand any exploit worthy the name of honour.
Such an exploit have I in hand, Ligarius, had you a healthful ear to hear of it.
By all the gods that Romans bow before, I here discard my sickness. Soul of Rome, brave son derived from honourable loins, thou, like an exorcist, hast conjured up my mortified spirit. Now bid me run, and I will strive with things impossible, yea, get the better of them. What's to do?
A piece of work that will make sick men whole.
But are not some whole that we must make sick?
That must we also. What it is, my Caius, I shall unfold to thee as we are going to whom it must be done.
Set on your foot, and with a heart new fired, I follow you. To do I know not what, but it sufficeth that Brutus leads me on.
Follow me then.
The second part of Julius Caesar is at the same time tomorrow here on Radio 4, or right now on the BBC iPlayer.
BBC News at 3 o'clock. The Premier League's executive chairman, Richard Scudamore, has described Leicester's title victory as the biggest sports story ever. Plaudits for the team have continued to pour in from across the world after the 5,000-1 outsiders were confirmed as champions. The club's former manager, Martin O'Neill, said the achievement was incredible and romantic, while an Italian newspaper claimed Leicester's triumph was comparable to Sir Edmund Hillary's conquest of Mount Everest. Briary Tomlinson worked on the Roy of the Rovers comic for more than 30 years.
Looking at Leicester City's achievements in recent months, it's like reading a script out of Roy of the Rovers. But having said that, I think if an author had submitted a script to me setting out the Leicester City achievements, I might have rejected it, saying it was too far-fetched. The phrase, it's real Roy the Rover stuff, maybe is going to be replaced by people saying it's real Leicester City stuff from now on.
Russia says it hopes a cessation of hostilities in the Syrian city of Aleppo will be declared within hours. Speaking after talks in Moscow with the UN Special Envoy for Syria, the Russian Foreign Minister Sergei Lavrov called on the Syrian government and opposition to work together to find a solution to the country's civil war. A police constable from Birmingham has been convicted of conspiracy to pervert the course of justice. Ammar Hussein made a hoax telephone call to claim he knew of a terrorist plot to kidnap a police officer. He'll be sentenced later this month. A petition has been delivered to the Department of Education as part of a campaign calling for a boycott of primary school tests in England. It's been signed by more than 40,000 parents. Ministers say tests improve standards. Air accident investigators in Norway say last week's helicopter crash, which killed 13 people, was caused by a technical error. An oil worker from Aberdeenshire, 41-year-old Ian Stewart, was among those who died when the Super Puma came down in the North Sea on Friday. BBC News. It's food for the next hour on Radio 4, because in half an hour, Tom Heap chairs a debate on how we should eat to reduce our carbon footprint and save the planet. How important are food miles, for instance? There are some who argue that food grown in hot countries and transported here by boat provides a lower overall carbon footprint than food grown in Britain. Join us for Costing the Earth at 3:30. But first, it's time to open up the kitchen cabinet. Here's your host, Jay Rayner.
Hello and welcome to a new series of The Kitchen Cabinet. You join us as we embark upon a seven-week voyage of discovery. We're determined to bring you a killer spread of food science and history, as well as plain old cooking tips to your kitchen table. And we're packed to the gunnels with double rum rations for the journey in case we need to take the edge off things. Today I'm in the grand setting of St Nicholas's Chapel in the historic port town of King's Lynn, Norfolk. And with me, your panel, ready with answers to your cooking and eating questions are a woman who can pack Caribbean flavour into even the driest ship's biscuit, it's soul food chef Andy Oliver. First port of call if you're stranded at sea, this man will drain the rum stores, but you can always rely on him to rustle up something from the rations. It's the master of food, dear.